Christian Decker is an engineer at Blockstream. We spoke in October about how their recently released Blockstream Greenlight works, custody trade-offs on the Lightning Network, and much more. Before we get into today's show, just a quick shout out to the sponsors. Today's show is sponsored by Stackwork. Stackwork is a lightning-powered transcription tool that takes the best of AI and humans to create better, faster, less expensive transcripts. Today's show is also sponsored by CrowdHealth. CrowdHealth was created to get rid of the headaches of health insurance and give you a better solution for your healthcare needs. Today's show is also sponsored by Vita, the free AI phone screener that stops unwanted spam by setting a price for your time. If you pick up the phone and call 606-SATS-123 or 606-728-7123, you'll get a link to download Vita and 2100 Sats. Christian, welcome back to the show. This is your second time, I believe. And today we're going to be talking a lot about the latest release from Blockstream, which is Greenlight. For those who have not seen your previous episode, I will link to it in the description. But why don't we start off with a high-level overview of Greenlight and what it is for those who haven't seen the recent release?
Sure, yeah. I think everything started from essentially the desire to help people onboard onto Lightning in a more secure and self-sovereign way. And the name actually comes from our desire to integrate Lightning into the Green Wallet, hence Greenlight. And the question was, how would we do that? The classical way of doing it is essentially to bundle a full Lightning node with the application itself, having the Lightning node run on your mobile phone in this case, and being controlled by the end user. The problem with that is that there's a couple of downsides of this, right? All of a sudden, your application, the wallet, is tightly integrated with a Lightning node, and so you don't really have mobility between applications. If I wanted to try out a new app, then I'd have to first tear down my Lightning node on one side, transfer funds over, open new channels, and essentially then find out that the app wasn't cool, and so I have to undo it all again. The other problem is that with the node running on the user device, the user is pretty much left alone with all of the complexity of Bitcoin and Lightning. And as such, we had a tendency of essentially building cool tech and throwing it over the wall, and well, if the user encounters an issue, good luck. And we wanted to provide a way for multiple applications to use the same resources, the same node. We wanted to make it simple for our own developers working on Green to integrate Lightning without them having to learn all of the intricacies of managing a Lightning node, so that they could then automate it and then deploy it on the user device, only to find out, oh, our assumptions on how to automate it were not as optimal as they could have been. And there's this whole stack of stuff that you as developer and you as a user have to learn before you're able to make use of Lightning, essentially. And that has pushed many users in the past towards custodial solutions, simply because custodial solutions, well, they have excellent user experience and user design, because much of the complexities are managed by the custodian. And we were looking into how could we replicate, or how could we get closer to the user experience that users want, that users are used to from the Web2 space, and at the same time not take on custody of the user funds. Because I, as a developer, as an operator of a service, I don't need and I don't want that liability of managing customer funds. And the result we came up with was essentially a solution where we took core Lightning, our Lightning offering, and we split it apart. We broke up all of the different pieces and put them together in a different combination that allowed us to take on some of the responsibilities for the infrastructure while having the user still in full and exclusive control over the funds that they own. And exclusive in this case means that our Blockstream operators or an attacker gaining access to the node running on our infrastructure cannot actually do anything with your funds, because you as the user in control of the keys will just not sign off on it. And I mentioned we built this for Green, but we were so convinced by the trade-offs and by the ease of use that we thought, well, we probably shouldn't keep this for ourselves. We can open this to other people and other developers and essentially enable them to build on a Lightning integration without having to invest all the time and resources to become Lightning experts themselves. And so we're not just broadening the reach of the Lightning network in terms of end users, but we're also broadening the reach for developers here. And from a developer point of view, the experience is very easy. You essentially just call an API like you would any other web service. And from an end user perspective, it's very easy. You download an app, you may be shown the seed phrase, and from there on, the node is already running in the cloud for you when you need it. And we take care of all of the difficult management, such as databases, database backups, connectivity, syncing the gossip, ensuring that you have connectivity to the Bitcoin backend, watchtowers, and so on and so forth. And so what we do best, namely the infrastructure piece, right, where you actually have to have the in-depth knowledge about how Lightning works, what is possible, what is safe, and what you should never do. And we free developers from having to take care of that, and we free users from having to learn this upfront learning, essentially. And our goal for this is to be an onboarding solution, showing users what they can get out of Lightning before showing them how to take control of their own monetary future. And if once they have seen what it can do for them, now they are incentivized to learn, to take on responsibility, and eventually to offboard off of Greenlight. So It's not our goal to have all of the Lightning users eventually be on Greenlight. No, we want to open this up for new parts of the community, future members of the community that haven't joined so far, may have been scared off by our attitude of, oh, you have to learn this best practices and you have to learn Lightning and you have to learn Bitcoin before you're even allowed to touch it. And enable them to eventually become fully self-sovereign Bitcoin community members.
Very cool. There's a lot of questions I have right now. First off, let's start with the node implementation side. So you mentioned Core Lightning. You kind of have to split it up a little bit and allow parts of the implementation to be run on your guys' side, on the infrastructure. And then you have the keys still managed by the user. Were there any changes required to the Core Lightning protocol to enable this functionality? And is this unique to Core Lightning? Can this be replicated on other implementations?
So with Core Lightning, we luckily had the foresight of thinking about this very early on. All of the operations that touch keys were already separated into a separate part of the system called the HSMD. And so we already had sort of the pre-folded lines where we could then tear up the diagram and sort of move pieces around. And it is this modularity and this foresight that allowed us to very quickly just take parts and swap them out, or move them somewhere else and have placeholders that instead of doing the computation himself, they are forwarding to somewhere else. And this allowed us to essentially take what is a Lightning implementation and redistribute it over several devices, several servers that are under the control of the end user or us as the operators for the parts that do not touch keys and that need all of the infrastructure provisioning. And I think it should definitely be possible with other implementations, but in our case, we happen to have thought about the separation of concerns right from the get-go. And as such, we were in a lucky position of essentially already having everything grouped in one piece and therefore being able to relatively easy split it out into a separate signer component that doesn't run on the node anymore. And we replace a couple of other stuff as well. But most of that is to provide fast startup and the ability of essentially preempting nodes that aren't being used. And so much of our scalability comes from the fact that if you're not using your node, we will just pause it and shut it down. And when you need it again, we will be spinning it up in less than a second again. And so from your point of view, it will look like the node is running 24/7, but in reality, we put it to sleep while you're not actually using it.
Now, you mentioned these kind of pre-folded lines, like you had planned out eventually to enable this functionality. Were you always planning to go with VLS as this like tool that enables the hardware signing, or did you plan to build that out yourselves initially?
So initially I'm talking 2016. So almost 7 years ago now. And back then there was no VLS project. As a matter of fact, the VLS project started taking inspiration from the communication protocol that we were using to talk to our HSMD. So they took our protocol draft and they then took that and refined it and actually swapped out our HSMD with their signer implementation while testing their project. And now they are giving us feedback on the protocol. So we very much sort of inspire each other to improve there. And it's been a very nice collaboration so far. And they've done a great job at implementing what we were hoping to eventually implement, but we never got around to do it. And well, now we have an implementation that ticks all of our boxes essentially.
Yeah, I had Ken from the VLS project on a previous episode, and just hearing his perspective and understanding what this was going to enable was pretty mind blowing to me. I honestly have to go back and rewatch the episode that I just recorded to really grasp a lot of the concepts. Mm-hmm. But you know, the ability to segregate the signing authority and the rest of the node, I think, is pretty powerful. What do you think of as the implications of that? So if that is to spread to all Lightning node operators, and now everyone has the ability through either Greenlight or through some other initiative maybe to segregate their signing from the rest of their node, what does that then lead to?
Oh, I think it leads to very, very interesting deployments. I should also mention that all of this software is open source right now, so you can go and check it out and start playing with it. So one thing that so we've essentially built out one sort of way of doing this, right? There are many many other sort of setups that you could build with such a with these components, so just by rearranging them. So for example, one thing that could be possible is for one of these signers to be writing an audit log, for example. So since any of the changes that touch funds need to be signed off by the signer, we could essentially co-locate an audit log writer with the signer. We could have more complicated setups where the signer is running in an enclave, taking multiple signatures and acknowledgements from multiple owners, essentially simulating multi-sig Lightning node management. There could be setups like ours where the node is running on untrusted servers, and due to the fact that the signer independently verifies whatever happens to funds and verifies that, hey, if I'm processing a pay command, then somebody authorized to initiate a pay command has actually called pay. And all of these end-to-end verification options we have built out should make the deployment landscape for a Lightning node much more interesting, because all of a sudden you can outsource all of the difficult parts. I like comparing it with how hardware wallets work today. When you use a Trezor, Ledger, or a Jade, you're not actually talking to the Bitcoin network directly. You're talking to the service provider or the company that built the hardware wallet for you. And you are interacting with a UI that is running on your computer, and you're interacting with a signer that is attached to your computer via USB probably. And those can be done, those are used to essentially initiate commands, right? We click on pay on the user interface, and then we click on OK on the hardware wallet, and then we send it to the operator of the hardware wallet, and they will actually maintain all of the infrastructure to talk to the Bitcoin network. And it's very similar with us here, right? We have a hardware we have a signer, potentially a hardware wallet eventually. And we have UIs, as many as you want. You could, for example, connect to your desktop. You could connect with your laptop and your phone at the same time. And those user interfaces are there to initiate operations and to view state. And the signer will actually be there to verify that yes, whatever happened on the servers was what I intended to do as a user. And so you remove that trust element there, and that is very powerful.
Right. Can I get you to steelman something here? I want to hear your view on, just we'll take the opposite side of this argument that infrastructure should be kind of managed by, in this case, Blockstream, and that's a good thing. So what is the take for why that is a bad thing? Why should people be concerned or maybe try to build up their own infrastructure? Why is it not ideal to have, or under what conditions is it not ideal to have someone like Blockstream or some other in the on-chain world, maybe it's Ledger or Trezor, managing the infrastructure that connects the user to either the Bitcoin blockchain or the Lightning Network?
Oh, I think that self-managed infrastructure should be preferred in all cases where possible. Self-managing your infrastructure and your Lightning node and your Bitcoin node is ultimately the best you can have when it comes to security and privacy. Assuming you are a technologically savvy user. However, that comes at quite the investment, both in terms of resources and time, because to operate a Lightning node safely, you have to know exactly what you're doing. For example, taking a backup of your Lightning node is in itself a very, very dangerous thing, because if you were tempted to restore that node, you might end up inadvertently cheating and therefore getting your funds stolen, right? That is because the two of us have agreed on state 101, and we did that by essentially exchanging a shotgun, telling each other, hey, if I ever come back and publish state 100, you're allowed to shoot me with this shotgun. And now if I restore an old backup, for example, then I might go back. I might forget that I had the shotgun from you, but even worse, I might forget that I gave you a shotgun. And so I might end up publishing state 100 and you just go, you just shoot me. And so these are intricacies that are really, really hard for end users to grok and to actually keep in mind when operating your node. And so in this case, I think it may make sense for a professional operator to step in and help out. However, a hosted offering always comes with downsides as well, right? The hosted offering, for example, comes with a downside of some extra visibility that we as operators might have in the user's activity. So for example, we have log access to these nodes, which is not desirable in terms of privacy, because I don't really care about what you do on Lightning, but I have to see it for debuggability. And as such, if you offboard into your own infrastructure, you will have better privacy. Now, I should also mention that this step down in privacy when running on Blockstream Greenlight comes at a massive gain, namely that with that information we can actually help users if they get stuck somewhere. We do that for developers, for example, quite a lot when they get a report that something didn't go right. That can ping us and we will help them debug and step through, oh, look, you called this method when in reality you should have called this. And we can learn what works and what doesn't in Core Lightning. And so we take our learnings and sort of ship them back into the open source Core Lightning project, making Core Lightning better for everyone. But it's definitely something to keep in mind that a hosted solution does come at a step down in privacy. And while I might promise you that we're not going to look at stuff, you'd still be trusting me that I keep that promise. And so ultimately, we want users to offboard into their own infrastructure if they have the capabilities and if they can do so safely.
Right. That makes sense. And I appreciate you talking through those trade-offs. Earlier in the conversation, you mentioned that if an attacker were to get control of, you know, resources on Blockstream side, that they would not be able to access any of the funds held by the user. Their keys are still on their signing device. What is the worst case scenario if an attacker is able to, you know, get into Blockstream's infrastructure here? What can they do? Can they prevent any payments from happening? Can they slow down or limit your ability to send and receive on Lightning, even if they can't outright take your funds? What are some of those kind of, you know, worst case scenarios?
I think the worst case scenario would essentially be a denial of service. So they can prevent you from making progress, in which case users would essentially export their node, deploy it on another infrastructure, and be working again. But yes, if an attacker really had access to everything, they could prevent people from using their node. but the funds would still be saved as such. We are looking into options where even if Blockstream were to disappear today, you could still continue working with your Lightning node. Something that we got inspired by Green itself. Green has a mode where you can essentially receive a time-locked way of retrieving your funds even if the Blockstream servers go away today. And that's something that we want to enable as well. Currently, what you can do is you can download the emergency recovery, a system similar to the static channel backups by LND, and you could essentially claw back all of the funds you had on your node without actually interacting with us anymore. So this capability is there already, but the worst thing an attacker could do is probably prevent you from spinning up your node on our infrastructure, in which case you just take it and move it elsewhere.
Yeah. Now, who is GreenLight designed for? Is this something that you foresee every Lightning user being able to take advantage of and you know, actually benefiting from? Or is this something that is like targeting maybe small or medium or large enterprises? What does that kind of customer demographic look like for you guys? Who are you really trying to target with this?
Yeah, so that's very interesting because initially I had like three or four personas that we were kind of designing for. Ultimately, we focused on where we saw the most demand being raised, namely end users that do not know a whole lot about Lightning and who might just want to dip in their toes in the water and see how it works, and developers catering to those users, right? So if you for example have an application where you create a wallet but you don't want to manage nodes on the user devices, and you don't want to essentially take custody of the user funds, essentially the two extreme, right? The user being left alone with the technology and sort of despairing, or the user trusting a third party but having an awesome experience. Essentially, we wanted to choose a middle ground to show to these new end users joining the Lightning network what can be achieved, and to help out developers that might not know or not want to manage Lightning nodes on behalf of their users, and giving them a simple API to code against. We are looking into other ways of recombining these pieces and offering maybe different trade-offs. So while we currently don't cater to large businesses, that is by no means something that won't change in the future. But for now, it's mostly end users.
I see. So imagine a hypothetical: if I am building an app and all of my users have wallets on the app, and you know, let's say I'm doing it right now, I'm doing it custodially, and just mm-hmm. making it easy for the end users. What does that new onboarding flow look like for the user if I choose to use GreenLight? How might their experience be different?
So their experience wouldn't be at all different. So what happens is you essentially can build an app where the flow is very simple and very usual almost for Bitcoin and Lightning. You download an app, you open the app, it shows you your 24 words, you write them down somewhere. It also offers you to be able to restore an existing node where you enter the 24 words. And once you click continue, you're essentially dropped into the overview of the Lightning node. You see a balance of zero Satoshis because, well, you haven't sent anything to that wallet yet. neither on-chain nor off-chain. And you could now just start sending funds to it and opening channels and do all the stuff that you would do with a Lightning node that is bundled with the application itself. With a couple of partner companies, Breeze, for example, we are also building out more advanced features such as an LSP integration, swap services, and LNURL. So from an endpoint end user point of view, you then essentially just go to create an invoice on your phone. There is a setup happening in the background with the LSP, and you're shown an invoice that just anybody can pay. And when somebody pays that invoice, the Breeze LSP will open a channel with your node, fund it accordingly, and forward that payment on demand. And that's the easiest way you could essentially send and receive money, right? You get a friend of yours, you show him an invoice, they send you a tenner, and then you pay the coffee, essentially. So it's very, very, very cool. Easy from an endpoint end user point of view.
Interesting. There was one word that I saw in your blog post release that set off a little light bulb in my head. I thought it was interesting. So you call Greenlight a non-custodial Lightning as a service. Mm-hmm. Why not LSP? Is there a particular reason you chose that phrasing? I know LSP Breeze, I think, uses that as liquidity service provider, but I think others use it as Lightning service provider. It feels like we have like three or four different terms now that are difficult to parse and kind of sometimes mean overlapping things. What is Lightning as a service to you? And is that kind of venturing into the territory of being an LSP?
So for me, the LSP has always been the liquidity service provider. And since we ourselves are not providing any liquidity, we didn't actually go for the LSP name. Breeze, is currently one of the LSPs that we integrate with, and they are actually the counterparty to all the channels of users of Greenlight. And that is something that's very important for us, because many of the attack scenarios in Lightning actually come from a collaboration of the two endpoints. And so having those two endpoints be different companies, we have a bit of separation in there, and it is much less likely for both endpoints to be compromised and colluding to defraud a user. But the Lightning node as a service name came from the idea of this is infrastructure. And in the infrastructure business, we've long had an as a service kind of suffix being used. So we had databases as a service, nodes as a service, we had platform as a service, we had many things as a service, but it very much felt like it fit into that nomenclature, simply being infrastructure, and it's different because we aren't just talking to some. With the LSP, the node we are talking to is actually fully owned and controlled by some other party. With Lightning node as a service, it's the node itself that is run on our servers as a service, and the signer counterpart is split out, and so that it is a relatively different deployment from what I would consider a usual LSP, which doesn't mean that that an LSP shouldn't be using VLS and a separate signer to secure their funds as well. So these are pretty much orthogonal ways of looking at the different trade-offs here and different sort of facets of who is operating what part of the ecosystem, and who is providing funds, and who is providing what kind of service to others.
I hope you're enjoying the show so far.
just a quick message from our sponsor, Stackwork. Stackwork is a lightning-powered platform for generating high-quality transcripts of all your audio or video content. They combine AI engines and hundreds of human workers all over the world who are paid over the Lightning Network to assemble these transcripts. And that's what lets Stackwork create better, faster, and less expensive transcripts. To see the results for yourself, you can check out my personal website where I host transcripts for all my podcast episodes. If you want to learn more about Stackwork, visit stackwork.com. That is stakwork.com.
Can you walk me through the business model of Greenlight and you know how and why you're making certain decisions? I want to understand like where you see revenue coming from, what kind of format that revenue takes. Is it a flat fee, a percentage fee? How do you make decisions on the business model here?
So it's a very interesting question that we don't yet have a conclusive answer to be perfectly honest. We are still looking into different pricing models of how we can pay for this service essentially. But currently we're focusing on offering a free tier, because we want to give developers, whether they be individual hackers or professional developers for small to medium businesses, we want to give them certainty that they won't wake up to a surprise bill. So what we announced in Amsterdam last week was essentially that by becoming a partner of Greenlight, and you can do that by just signing up at greenlight.blockstream.com, you get credentials, and those credentials allow you to create, register up to 1,000 nodes, and run these nodes for free forever essentially. And that is there because I know very well how it feels to wake up to a surprise bill and already having made the choice of committing to a certain technology, and then you're like, ah, damn. So while we're still figuring out the overall pricing model, we want to make sure that everybody's safe and can make that choice. When it comes to costs, we are essentially just running this infrastructure in the cloud, and we do have certain resources that we need to pay for, like databases, virtual machines, and so on. But that cost is very, very small for us. So we have some models that give us a price per user of way below $5 per month per user. And those are definitely cost savings that we want to give users, we want to forward users. That being said, we're still looking into how stuff actually looks like.
What's the fundamental reason for that? You mentioned you can kind of get below $5 a month per user as a cost. Can you speak to what are the components in that cost and how realistic is it for that number to compress over time?
So the costs primarily come down to the infrastructure that we run on behalf of the users. That includes watchtowers, that includes databases, that includes database backups, that includes virtual machines to run these nodes. The higher density we can deploy the core Lightning nodes, which by itself already has a very, very lightweight footprint, the higher density we can deploy them, the lower the cost. The more people, of course, if you offboard, your node will be free forever, hence also the sort of push to offboard people into their own infrastructure once they've learned and of course by increasing efficiencies in Greenlight itself, we can further push that price point down. I should also mention those $5 are just an example. They're not actually our numbers.
Oh, I see. I do imagine though that, you know, even though $5 may not be the perfect number, I think the cost is still non-zero, and it probably in the current version of the Lightning Network, I think it seems like users may have to bear some portion of that cost in one way or another. And yep. I wonder if you think that is inhibiting progress and adoption on Lightning, that there's like an element that like an upfront cost associated with it, whereas the last 15 years of the internet have kind of taught people that everything's free, and yeah. like you just spin up an account and it's just like your social media account's free. It just don't worry about it. We'll take care of the cost of hosting your images for you.
Yeah. So essentially, what we ended up doing here is that we aren't really charging the end user at all. We are charging the developers who are making use of Greenlight to implement Lightning into their applications. And so it's up to the developers to decide, do we want to pass this cost on to the end user, or should we, or are we making enough money to sponsor these nodes on behalf of our users, right? And we have a couple of use cases where we can actually fold in the hosting costs into their offering, and they essentially have a margin that is enough to cover all of their users' node costs and still have enough margin left for the company to operate. If anybody is approaching the 1,000 free nodes, they should probably reach out to us. We're very flexible when it comes to agreements on how to get all of this working, and then we can also talk about specific numbers. Like I said, I'm just using example numbers here, but for some of the applications built on top of Greenlight, it's actually free for users because the developers actually have a use case that makes money for them, which is very similar to the Web 2.0 kind of system, right? Facebook is eating yeah. the hosting costs because their main business is actually paying for it.
That's right. Yeah, so that is, I guess, a good comparison that even though a user might not see it, there is a cost being incurred somewhere and someone has to pay for it. And as long as some of these Lightning companies that may choose to use Greenlight or other services, as long as they are able to make enough profit, they could even kind of completely abstract away that cost for the users.
Exactly.
I want to shift gears and talk a little bit about it.
It's also in our interest to make this as accessible as possible, right? So our margin is we try to keep our own margin as small as possible to enable as many people as possible to onboard, because this right. is essentially growing the pie when it comes to the Lightning community and bringing new users to the network that can then sort of make use of existing services, and leveraging this bigger user base, you can actually increase your revenue on other services as well. So mm-hmm. that is also consideration we have here. We don't want this to be a once and done product. This is essentially an enabling product to open up the Lightning, the world of Lightning to a bigger audience.
Yeah. I want to touch on one point on custody. Mm-hmm. Again, this is from your blog post announcing Greenlight. You said, when it comes to Lightning, users and developers are often forced with the trade-off between convenience and self-custody. And you kind of follow up by saying Greenlight fixes this. And I want to get your sense for whether or not a self-custodial solution can be the best experience for an end user. Because still today, I think most people use custodial Lightning wallets today. I think most of the activity that I've seen from collected from different data sources on Nostr, for example, a lot of folks are using Wallet of Satoshi or other custodial wallets. Can it be the absolute best experience to use self-custody, or is there always going to be some difference there between those two experiences where, sure, you can make self-custody better, but custody is always, or a custodial solution is always going to be at a slight advantage? Where do you stand on that issue?
I think we can get very, very close to the user experience that custodial solutions provide. However, it is unlikely that we'll ever beat it as such, because by the very nature of self-custody, users will be exposed to more details. Users will have to be more cognizant of what they are doing in self-custodial systems, because there often isn't a safety net that prevents them from doing something that is dangerous. Custodial solutions, they have all of the freedoms they want, right? They are in full control over all of the funds, they are in full control over the nodes, they are in full control over the channels. And as such, whatever a self-custodial solution can do, they can probably do. But without having to ask the user to help them out, because in our case, we have to ask the user to help us out by essentially signing off on stuff, such as transactions. I say we can get very, very close, because by creating good and safe automation, such as the end-to-end verification that we have built into Greenlight, we can take away potential mistakes the user could make while holding on to their funds. Us as developers, we're often tempted to essentially just take sort of the roughest cut of every tool and be happy with it, because it allows us to do very, very intricate and difficult stuff. But that stuff is also very dangerous when given to end users that do not know all of the details. And so I think by simplifying, by abstracting away all of the complexities, we can provide a user experience that gets close to the custodial solution. And if we consider security and privacy on top of it, I think the overall bundle may even exceed custodial solutions. But it's always hard to communicate that to end users, because security is only a concern after something bad has happened, and privacy is only a concern if you really need it. And so this is a very nuanced discussion we have to make here. But I think purely from the functionality, custodial solutions are probably always going to be the easiest to use solution. But it comes at the cost of trusting a third party. The self-custodial solution, we can get close, and security and privacy is better. However, there will still be a bit of learning on the user side as well. And some things we simply cannot do, right? We cannot take funds from one user and reallocate it to somebody else, or I'd be in front of a jury right now defending myself like SDF is currently doing.
Right. Now, okay, one other question on Greenlight, and this is related to hardware wallets. So Blockstream has Jade, and you mentioned also Green being the mobile, you can use it on my phone. And you mentioned Greenlight was kind of built with Green in mind. Will there be a future in which Jade is able to act as a signing device for Greenlight or some other future hardware wallet?
We're still considering it ourselves, but one very interesting tidbit is that the VLS team actually started out with the idea of building out hardware wallets for Lightning. And their setup they use for testing uses an STM32 chip, which happens to be the same chip that we have on the Jade wallet. And as such, it is very plausible that at some point some wallet developer will create a hardware wallet that can work with Greenlight. And I'd absolutely be excited for that future, because it's long been my dream too to just have a hardware wallet that I can use to secure my keys and ensure that nothing bad happens to my funds. Ideally, what I'd like even is to just have a hardware wallet that I can plug into wall at home, and it will serve as the signer for me and my family, and then all of our funds are secure on a hardware wallet, and our node is available 24/7 to receive and send payments, and I'd have the keys essentially segregated from the devices that I carry around every day, such as laptops and phones, adding yet another layer of security on what is already a system that is very secure by itself.
So possible is what I'm getting from this, that it may be possible to kind of condense all of one's Bitcoin hardware wallet activity and Lightning activity into a single device used for signing. Yeah. I think that'd be a very powerful idea, because it's kind of like when you go to an exchange or like a Bitcoin exchange and you know, one only accepts on-chain deposits and withdrawals, one does Lightning. You use an app and you earn some sats and it happens to be on Lightning. You can't use the first exchange. You got to go to the second, then go back to the first. And, you know, it's a headache to have to go through all the hoops of making sure that the funds you have on Lightning are compatible with the funds you have on Bitcoin. And I think at the hardware signer level, that's obviously still an issue, and it's still something that is, you have two kind of different sets of tools you're using to manage funds. And, you know, it just strikes me as like, it'd be so much easier if everyone just had this one device, and then we could say, this is Bitcoin. It doesn't matter if it's on chain. It doesn't matter if it's on Lightning. This is the tool you're going to use to interact when you want to send Bitcoin, when you want to receive it. Here's your tool.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a nice sort of idea to have a one-stop shop when it comes to securing your keys in a hardware wallet, whether they're on or off chain. The reason why we don't have it right now is because the patterns are very different, right? When you want to perform an on-chain payment, you essentially just prepare the transaction on your phone or your laptop, and then you plug in the signer to sign off on the transaction to make it complete before submitting it to the network. This is essentially a one-off operation, right? You just plug it in on demand, and then you sign off. Whereas Lightning has a completely different access pattern. With Lightning, we have interactivity requirements, we have timeout requirements that we need to fulfill, and as such, the hardware wallet remains plugged in essentially. And because we don't want the user to be there and click off and check on a tiny screen what they are being asked to sign off, we need to automate some of these reactions. Otherwise, you might be woken up in the middle of the night and being asked, hey, a fee has changed, do you want to accept this fee change? And you're like, why did you wake me up at 3 a.m. in the morning? And so we need to make sure that many of these decisions can be automatically accepted and be automatically handled by the signer. And therein lies the difficulty, right? How do we make sure that I am actually following the intent of the user rather than what the node is proposing to me. And hence also where the end-to-end verification came in. And so it is very much this this combination of green light and VLS that that all of a sudden makes hardware wallet a possibility and hopefully a future reality as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, how much of a problem is it that I think on-chain hardware wallets, the goal is to just extract that and remove it from the web, all the signing, and you're trying to put it on this device that is entirely disconnected from the internet. And then Lightning, of course, needing that, you know, uptime and needing to be connected to the web to, you know, process payments. How difficult is it to marry those two and put them into a single device, given that one wants to be away from the web and the other needs to be close to the web?
Yeah, I think the main difficulty that we haven't decided on a solution yet is how do we get that communication established between the hardware wallet and what ultimately is an online server. And there are different models that we are looking into. Some of them have essentially terminate the HTTPS connection on one side and then use a serial port on the other side, acting as a proxy in between. And when it comes to that, essentially, your surface that somebody might attack hasn't really increased by all that much. With all of the verification logic in the hardware wallet, this companion app that essentially takes messages from left and transforms them and sends them over to the right doesn't really open up more attack surface. On the other hand, we're also looking into having the hardware wallet connect directly to the web service. Essentially, when I was talking before about having a hardware wallet I can plug into a wall, that would have to connect to the web service by itself. And there we have an increase in surface, right? So all of a sudden we have an TLS client inside of the hardware wallet. All of a sudden we have a VLAN components in the hardware signer. All of a sudden we have these more advanced kind of features that might all present some opening, and hence why we haven't decided on one model or the other. I still believe that that simply the fact of segregating your keys into a separate device has value in itself. Whether that device has a secure element or not, but it's not reachable from your main devices where you download PDFs that might have been sent to you from a phisher or a virus or whatever. These are specialized devices that run very specific software that has been vetted by experts. And that alone already provides you with an increase in security for those keys. How we then end up connecting to the web, we will of course take into consideration all of the learnings from the past to make sure that we keep that attack surface as narrow as possible. But you're right, it might end up slightly increasing the attack surface. But like I said, simply segregating keys is of value in itself.
I see. Beyond the idea of Greenlight and Jade working together, I want to talk about the entire Blockstream suite of products here, because I know you guys have like a dozen products, and I can't even keep track of all the names. You got like satellites, you got hardware wallets, you got mobile wallets, you got Lightning stuff. You got an implementation. What are you guys thinking about in terms of helping these products work together? I imagine these are not designed to be siloed things forever where none of them interact with each other. I imagine you guys have at least thought through how they might interact with each other. I guess green light and green in the first instance of that, or in one instance of that. But are there any other instances where you think, you know, in a few years, we're going to be able to pull all the cool stuff we did with this product and connect it to this, and oh my God, it's gonna be magical.
Ooh, am I ready to share our master plan? I don't know. No, we definitely look into where different parts can build a symbiotic relationship and help each other and improve the overall experience. You already mentioned green and green light. There's definitely some overlap and a way for us to improve just by collaborating there. You also mentioned the satellite. For the longest time, ever since we launched the satellite, for example, you can essentially send messages over the satellite, and the payment is done via Lightning. We've opened the Blockstream store back in 2018, and that has surprisingly been very, very popular with people buying stickers, buying satellite kits, and so on. And most of those payments still go through Lightning. And over the last 2 years, for example, we've also implemented PeerSwap, which allows you as a Lightning node to swap Bitcoin on chain for a rebalancing on your local channel. And that has, for example, support for the Liquid network as well. The Liquid network not being congested and having 1 minute blocks, for example, is a way for us to much quicker get funds on chain from A to B, almost matching the speed of the Lightning network. We've also added support for LBTC, I want to say 4 years ago. And you could run Lightning on Liquid. And many of these smaller sort of symbiotic relationships. I had one of my weekend projects become one of the official Blockstream products by accident, and that was the LN Sync project, which I essentially wanted to build as a proof of concept how to quickly synchronize the gossip. In case your Lightning node was offline for a couple of hours, you could essentially just ask for, hey, I was last online 3 hours ago. Can you tell me what the network looks, what has changed in the network since then? And that has been made into a satellite project now. So you can just by keeping your satellite dish pointed to one of the satellites we operate, you can synchronize the network view, the Lightning network view, and route based on that graph data, for example. So there's a whole lot of small crossovers, and of course, Jade being part of sort of the wallet section of the wallet and payment section of Blockstream is of course very interesting to look into. But yeah, there's a lot of cross insemination where we can find nice symbiotic relationships and overall build more advanced and more interesting use cases.
Health insurance sucks. It's confusing, expensive, and frustrating. But there's a better way. CrowdHealth was created to get rid of the headaches of health insurance. You get access to a community of people who are willing to help out in the event of an emergency, as well as telemedicine visits and more, without doctors' networks getting in the way. Let CrowdHealth help with your healthcare needs. You can get started today for just $99 per month for the first 3 months if you use code Kevin to get the healthcare you deserve. Again, CrowdHealth is not insurance. Learn more at joincrowdhealth.com. That's joincrowdhealth.com. Code Kevin. Now, I'm not sure if you have this data or if you're allowed to talk about it, but I'm going to ask anyways. Among this like suite of products you have, are there any products at Blockstream where you're going internally, you're going, wow, this is really working and is profitable and like it deserves doubling down on versus building out another product? Or are we still at the phase of like experimentation where we're trying new products, seeing what's going to work and hoping a couple of them get traction? Like, I'm trying to understand from a business perspective, do you have any real signals of like, this is absolutely going to be a strong business? Or are you still building out that infrastructure, trying to get, you know, the initial bits of adoption, and you know, it may take a few more years to decide whether or not it's a worthy business venture?
I'm not perfectly up to date on what the individual products are. I probably couldn't even list them all, so I'm probably not the right person to ask. But by looking over the various products that we have, it is very clear to me that that there are many products that are in different stages of development. Some of them are already very mature and are being developed further and are very successful. Others are still being built out, and only the future will tell. From a technological mm-hmm. point of view, I would count Core Lightning, Green Light, sort of in between the exploratory phase and the maturity phase. We have verified that that the system works. We are working on improving performance. Of course, there's always stuff we could do, but I'm very happy with how it's currently working and how it's looking. And as you can probably tell by my answer to the pricing question before, that is sort of the part where we're not quite sure yet, and where we are still looking to reach that maturity. But from the product is something that is very mature, and that is probably also because Core Lightning, being so mature and solid, gave us the ability to build Greenlight on a very, very strong foundation, and we've had a system similar to Greenlight in the back of our minds from the very get-go when we started Core Lightning, and therefore we already had many of these considerations in mind and made sure we addressed them ahead of time.
Makes sense. Have you received any feedback from, you know, early users in the last week or so of Greenlight? You know, anyone who's tested it out so far, or if it's still too early for that, are there any folks who you'd like to see tested out? Anyone in the Lightning ecosystem where you'd just like to give a shout out, hey, come on over and try out Greenlight?
I definitely like to see anybody we can get try out Greenlight. I think it's a very attractive sort of point on the spectrum of trade-offs, and it might be one of the easiest ways to build out an application that has a Lightning integration, whether that's a wallet, whether that's a chat application, or whatever, your washing machine if you want to do machine to machine payments. I think it comes very close to the custodial experience, but doesn't compromise on the security of user funds. And so I think it's probably something that is attractive to many users. When it comes to actual feedback, we have been testing Greenlight for last a year and a half with integration partners. Before we went for general availability, we had a lengthy closed beta where we invited partners and companies that are interested in testing out Greenlight to collaborate with us on verifying the premise and to make sure that it actually works out for their use cases. And so far the feedback has been absolutely amazing. People very much like the ability of just having to integrate a simple API and being able to just call the node as if it were just any other service that they're running. the concept of essentially having a front end and a separate signer took a bit of to get used to. But as long as you can ensure that the signer is present when you want to use the node, you're all good. We've tweaked the interfaces over the time quite a bit. We've expanded support for the RPC that Core Lightning exposes, and so pretty much any application that you can build on Core Lightning, you can just adapt to integrate with Greenlight in maybe an afternoon. So it's been exciting to see what kind of applications, and I don't want to spoil any of them because there are quite a few interesting ones getting started soon. But it's been very interesting to see sort of the expectations and the requirements from a variety of companies, and being able to say, okay, if we tweak this, this becomes a bit more easier to achieve. And if we go that way, maybe you can tweak your use of Lightning slightly. And it's been very interesting to just bounce ideas off of each other and see a very active feedback cycle going on here, and just being able to see it all working is a lot of fun.
Yeah. Now, one thing I like to do is I keep track of a lot of Lightning metrics, and I like pulling from a number of different sources to see what's happening on the network. Will Greenlight nodes be visible as like public Lightning nodes? Would this be something that, like, if 1,000 new nodes get spun up on Greenlight, will the numbers on Amboss show 1,000 more Lightning nodes, or is that not visible to Amboss?
No, these would essentially be end user nodes, and for the more end user nodes that aren't online 24/7, like I mentioned before, we only spin them up when the signer is actually online and an application is making use of the node. Otherwise, well, we can't sign off on any changes, so why keep the node running and the resources occupied? And as such, it doesn't really make sense to publish these nodes to the wider network, because the whole reason for us to publish it to the wider network isn't cloud. It's actually for others to use your channels to route through you to somewhere else. And well, if you're offline like 90% of the time, that will not work, right? We're just adding to sort of the data that nodes wanting to do payments have to learn about, but they can't really use it because your node is offline 24/7. Or is offline only when you have the app open. And so we decided to not make nodes announce their channels, and not announcing channels also means that the node itself isn't being announced. And right. This very much reflects essentially the point that, well, these are ephemeral nodes, right? We spin them up when they're needed, and we spin them down when we can't make progress anyway. And telling about them to the rest of the network is simply just noise for the rest of the network, essentially.
Makes sense. All right, let's go to the lightning round. I got a couple rapid fire questions for you. May have had these on our first episode, but I'm gonna fire them off again just in case. First one is there any recent book that you've read that has changed your view of the world?
Yes, I recently read Cory Doctorow's, I don't remember the title, I only remember the subtitle because it's Seize the Means of Computation. It's a book about the monopolistic approaches that many of the big tech companies have taken to essentially growing and fending off the competition by either acquiring them or keeping them small through patent litigation. Very interesting book. And it highlights how the patent and IP rights regulation have been abused to essentially enable monopolies instead of keeping them small.
Interesting. Are there any Bitcoin or Lightning opinions that you once held, but you've recently changed your mind on?
I think this one is a bit meta, but I recently changed from everybody having to absolutely run the most secure setup and having to learn about all of the intricacies to a mental model where I think it's more about the ability of people to do so in case they need it, and keeping mobility inside of the ecosystem alive is more important than actually forcing people to absolutely use that right now. If I had to give an example, we as Bitcoiners always had or still have this view that before you touch anything that is Bitcoin related, you have to sort of read through this 1,000-page tome, and before you did that, you're essentially just a dumb user that isn't allowed to touch Bitcoin. And that is something that may work for the small, tight-knit and tech-savvy community that we have today, but it is not something that that will work longer term to onboard a wider sample of humanity. And it is we should yes, build tools that embody those best practices and that enable users to be as secure as possible, but we ultimately can't decide on their behalf that they now that they should now invest the time to learn about distributed computing and the intricacies of the monetary system and all of the fun stuff we like to talk about. We shouldn't be excluding people. We shouldn't be gatekeeping people because they might not have the same tech chops. But what I think is important is we need to maintain the ability to, from a beginner, take the steps to become an absolute professional and take on all of the responsibilities. And it's up to us to create those tools for these people. Ultimately, I'm not here to shame a baker into learning Bitcoin and investing hours and hours learning about the monetary system and learning about the upsides and downsides of Bitcoin. They will do it on their own time, or maybe it's not as important for them, but we still want them as users. So we should provide them with the tools that suit their specific risk tolerance and their own their specific desire for self-management and self-control.
Makes sense.
But we shouldn't shame people into it.
Right. And sometimes I think that that approach of saying you're not a real Bitcoiner unless you do X, Y, and Z ends up leaving a lot of people on the sidelines completely, or even developing resentment towards Bitcoiners and just, you know, it almost guarantees that person's not coming near Bitcoin. And I think what you're suggesting here is just there's a staircase approach where you can kind of start at a beginner level and work your way up, or have the ability to work your way up if interested. And exactly. In the meantime, you're now introducing Bitcoin to more people.
Exactly. Yeah. It's also interesting from whom these orthodoxies usually come, right? It's usually not the engineers that have been working on this for years and are aware of the difficulties of getting there, but oftentimes it's the people that just went through that process and now have the feeling that I did the hard part, so everybody else also has to do the hard part. and we end up excluding a lot of people that might feel very welcome otherwise in the community, but sort of putting the cart in front of the horse by saying, hey, first you learn this and then you're allowed to reap the benefits of all of your investments, essentially.
Right. Okay, final question for you. Is there anyone in the Bitcoin or Lightning ecosystem that you'd like to give a shout out to for doing great work?
There's so many. I've been in this space forever, there's probably quite a few names that I'm going to forget, but probably have to say Rusty Russell, my teammate and a longtime friend has to be on that list. Adam Back, of course, and let's finish the trio with Satoshi Nakamoto, whoever they may be.
Awesome. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat today. I learned a ton. I hope listeners did as well. Where can people go to learn more about you and Greenlight?
So Greenlight has a landing page on the Blockstream product page. That would be blockstream.com. And then follow the products category. We are also open sourcing all of our code for Greenlight on github.com/blockstream/greenlight. That contains all of the pieces, bits and pieces you need to build out your own infrastructure if you choose to offboard from Greenlight. So that's already available. And me personally, I'm still on Twitter under the handle Snyke, SNYKE.
Awesome. Thanks again for the time. Hope we can do it again soon.
Hey, thank you so much.